Ahoy, mateys! Welcome to the GameBuoy.org video game podcast, your twice-monthly port of call for gaming news and views that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. I'm your host, Captain Spike, and with me, as always, is First Mate Slagkick.
Yarr!
Today is September 13th, 2015, and this is Episode 92, World of Mario. Welcome, once again, our lovely and beautiful listeners, to another episode of the GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
This week, we're continuing our Mario Month celebration of 30 years of Mario by taking a look at the spin-off Mario game series.
It's actually his 30th birthday today, officially.
Oh, congratulations.
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 Whack!
So buckle in and get ready for that. But first, we have our usual slate of follow-ups and news bits. Slaggy, why don't you get us started today?
Yeah, a while back we talked about The Legend of Legacy, which is Atlus's Saga-inspired 3DS game with former Saga team members. They, being Atlus, will be putting out the first two dungeons on September 22nd as a demo, and the save file that you have for the demo can be transferred to the full game that comes out on October 13th.
Excellent. You know, that's one of my favorite features for a demo to have is when you can transfer your data to the full game. Disgaea 5 has a demo on the PSN right now, in fact, and you can take your save data from that to the full game, too.
Nice!
So, yeah, I love when that happens. I obviously, you know, I'm not super into replaying the same content over and over and over, so it's always cool, like, to play a demo and then be like, awesome, I can, you know, take this data and take this, you know, work I've already put into the game and take it to the full game. So, very cool. Legend of Legacy, a game I'm super looking forward to. I like every part of this news.
Yeah, and other fantasy classic series related news. Square Enix is going to be announcing more details about the upcoming Seiken Densetsu game on September 17th. Well, it'll be September 16th in Japan.
In North America, in the Pacific region, this will be happening at 8 a.m. on the 16th.
Yes, you're right. I don't know time zones still, as we learned last week.
And last but certainly not least for our follow-ups, we have word here that Capcom is adding another fighter to Street Fighter V. This one is a character named Rashid.
Yeah.
He's an all-new character. He's Middle Eastern. He is a wind-based fighter, so it looks like he's going to be working with kind of like a trap mechanic where he uses, like, tornadoes to sort of manipulate the opponent, and it looks like really good stuff. We have a gameplay reveal trailer for him already, and it's just looking very good.
That's great.
To say nothing about the fact that also, you know, it's kind of a sexy character design.
That's true, and, you know, hopefully positive representation. Hopefully there won't be, like, cliches and such.
We also have word here that Dengeki Bunko Fighting Climax Ignition will be releasing on PlayStation 4, PlayStation 3, and PlayStation Vita in Japan on December 17th.
Dang, didn't we just get it here, like, a few weeks ago?
I don't think we've gotten it yet. We're getting the first version of the game, like, soon, and Japan is getting the sequel in a couple months.
I just get confused because you import everything.
Whatever.
Dark Souls 3 is going to be coming out in Japan on March 24th, 2016, for the PS4 and Xbox One.
We don't yet know when it'll be releasing in North America, but I would expect an announcement before this episode even gets uploaded. I think this is probably something we're going to get confirmed tomorrow morning. So please look forward to that. Just think, you in the future actually have more information than we do right now.
Ooh.
We also finally have word of a release date for the Plague of Shadows expansion for Shovel Knight. This is, of course, the free add-on content that adds an entire new campaign to the game. It'll be releasing on all platforms on September 17th.
Oh, wow.
I am super butthurt about that because I've been wanting to play this for forever.
Oh, and you'll be out of town.
And I'm going to be out of town when this releases. Yeah. So whatever. I'm super looking forward to this. The expansion looks great. And more Shovel Knight is always a good thing.
Well, you have like 5 3DSs. Can't you just bring one with you on your
Yeah, but I don't have that game on 3DS, so I'd have to buy it again. And I might
do
that.
Deal.
We also have word here that Binding of Isaac Afterbirth, which is the huge expansion for the previously released Rebirth, will be hitting Steam for $9.99 on October 30th. A release date for consoles hasn't yet been announced, but supposedly it is not far off. We also have word that the game formerly known as Shin Megami Tensei Cross Fire Emblem, or Geni Ibun Roku Sharp FE, will be releasing in Japan on December 26th.
What's that Japanese title again?
Geni Ibun Roku Sharp F-E.
Geni Ibumroku Sharp F-E?
I believe so.
You just sound very hesitant when you said it.
Oh, and last but certainly, certainly, not least.
You forgot a few little details about the Geni Ibumroku Sharp F-E release.
Well, why don't you say them then?
There are going to be first print copies. The first print copies are going to include some DLC from other Atlus games like Shin Megami Tensei 4, Devil Survivor 2, Persona Q, and Etrian Odyssey 3. And additionally, there's a Fortissimo edition that will include special box art, a 6-track OST, an art book, and original DLC costumes, including swimsuits for both the female and male characters.
Awesome.
Yeah, the whole idea of like, oh, fan service costumes is pretty controversial, but the fact that they are for both male and female characters is good, I think.
When there's equal representation, it's hard for me to be butthurt about it. But, you know, still some people are, and, you know, that's their point of view, and that's all good. We also have word here, big news that was announced this morning, in fact. StarCraft II Legacy of the Void will be releasing on November 10th. Blizzard revealed this today during the World Championship Series Season 3 finals on Twitch. There is a official release of the cinematic trailer for Legacy of the Void, and this is this is exciting stuff as a StarCraft fan to see this finally finished playing out.
Yeah.
So unless you have anything else, Saggy, I think that's it for our follow-ups.
Oh my god!
Time for some news.
News. Oh my god, news.
So the first news here is kind of a big one, but we're not going to spend too much time talking about it. Just because, it's not typically in our wheelhouse. But, since it does have a big gamer focus, it still is going to be, something we talk about a little bit. You probably guessed here, Apple, whom we don't talk about a whole lot here on the show, announced the new Apple TV device.
Excuse me, this is an Apple buoy.
Which is exactly why I framed this the way I did, Slaggy. This is basically going to be an iOS device for your TV, not entirely dissimilar to the already existent Apple TV devices, but now it's going to have a Wiimote-type remote that allows for motion control gaming for games that are exclusive to this device. And the first game out of the box that it's going to have, you're going to have to buy it, but it'll be available at launch, is Harmonix Beat Sports, which is a game that is going to be exclusive to the Apple TV, and it is a Harmonix motion control gaming take on Rhythm Heaven.
Well, shit.
Right?
I was going to say, I'm going to have to get an Apple TV now, but you'll probably just get the Apple TV.
I am going to get one because I have to play a Harmonix game. Like, I can't imagine skipping, even though I don't really want this device otherwise. It also does have 4-player local co-op play, which is, like, everyone will, like, sync their phone to the device and then use their phone as their controller. So, that's neat. They also showed off Crossy Road, which is a take on a game that already exists. Well, actually, it's a take on a Crossy Road game that already exists, which is itself a take on a game that already exists.
True.
As many people noted, it's basically Frogger. It's kind of cool, though. I've played Crossy Road on the phone. It's not bad. Anyway, the device overall, it's going to be $150 for the 32 gig, $200 for the 64 gig, has the most current Apple processor in it.
By which you mean and 6 Plus, right? Not the newly announced 6S and 6S Plus.
Oh, I suppose that's true, yeah. Because they have a new A9 or chip or some nonsense. Whatever. I don't really care that much about Apple chips.
Apple chips are super good. How dare you?
And you can... I like them, too. They taste great. You can use, third-party game pads for, games if you have them. Overall, the whole thing sounds a little silly. I'm sure we're only going to see limited support ever for this thing. But, again, Harmonix game that's exclusive, I'm in for $150, I guess.
Well, then there's, Disney Infinity, and, other things available elsewhere. Guitar Hero Live, so...
That's my thing, is that they did announce other games, but none of it was exclusive.
Yeah, but like, still interesting. We're going to have to see how this continues to develop.
Yeah, I don't know. It'd be interesting to see if they do any better than the Ouya. I have my doubts, frankly.
The fact that it's not just a gaming device and it's an Apple TV means, you know, it doesn't have to.
Well, but again, you know, I'm not talking about overall market penetration. I mean, in terms of getting content.
Dirty.
Like, I if it doesn't get content, I don't really care.
That's true.
So anyway, moving on, we also got word from an interview with Shigeru Miyamoto-san, who told Eurogamer that Pikmin 4 is not only in development, it is quote-unquote very close to completion.
What?
Right? After this interview, Eurogamer reached out to Nintendo, who confirmed, "We can confirm that Pikmin 4 is in development, but that is all we can confirm at present." So, you know, this is something to look forward to if you're a fan of Pikmin, which, you know, we certainly are here in studio.
Pikmin NX.
We also got word that there is going to be a series of new Nintendo 3DS Hello Kitty faceplates, as well as a standalone new 3DS Hello Kitty edition.
Well, now we know which one Rob from Orange Lounge Radio is getting.
Ah, real talk. That's why I brought it up here.
And I mean, the Animal Crossing one was already cute enough.
We also finally got an announcement out of Capcom that in January 2016, Dragon's Dogma Dark Arisen will be available on Windows PC for Steam. This is going to be a $29.99 release. And I'm super looking forward to this. Dragon's Dogma was actually a really fun game.
Awesome.
We also have word here that Sayonara Umihara Kawase is going to be releasing on PC via Steam in October.
Oh, that's awesome.
And something that's really cool about this is that Agatsuma Entertainment, who is bringing it over to PC, is also going to be bringing over Umihara Kawase and Umihara Kawase Shun at a later date. So we're actually going to be getting, like, all, you know, the big games in this series on PC in North America. I think this is stupendous.
That's great. I can't believe it's been, like, 20 years since the original Umihara Kawase.
Yeah, pretty much, huh? Holy cats. That was in 94, so yeah, wow. We also have word here that Arcana Heart 3 Love Max will be coming. Will be coming to Steam in North America. This is a 2D fighting game going to be published by Arc System Works, and it will be releasing on September 29th. Additionally, we have word from Square Enix that Final Fantasy V is coming to PC via Steam on September 24th.
This is the iOS version, isn't
this
it?
This is a port of the iOS version, unfortunately. But at least that means that it will be the most content-complete version of the game that exists.
Yeah.
You just have to deal with those butt-ugly sprites.
Yeah, I guess you don't have to deal with the, like, god-awful touch controls.
That's true. And hey, you know, it's a PC release, so there will probably be a mod to restore the original art.
Oh, that's delightful, then.
So long-term, this could end up being the best way to play the game with mods.
Oh, up next we have just a little news bit. Huh?
Why don't you take this one, Slaggy? I know you're excited about it.
So, this isn't really that big of a deal. There was a kind of press event thing from the Pokemon Company a few days ago, and the designer of Pokemon, Junichi Masuda, and they have unveiled a new Pokemon mobile game. Now, before you're like, oh, Pokemon, blah, 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 random puzzle game, this is Pokemon Go, and it is co-developed by Niantic, which is probably best known for Ingress, the kind of AR smartphone game with GPS functionality. So basically, they're working on a game that is Pokemon in the real world. You go and see it through your iPhone, and you could go and catch a Pokemon in the real world. It'll come with a Pokemon watch sort of thing. Which, did that have a name? Oh, it's called the Pokemon Go Plus. So basically, everyone who has dreamed of being an IRL Pokemon trainer is screaming and crying right now.
Ah, real talk.
Yeah, I legit know people who, like, were having feelings watching this trailer, and, like, I feel it.
I feel it, yeah. I'll be playing this for sure. I cannot wait. The full release is going to be in 2016, but it is going to be in beta later this year.
Yeah,
fingers crossed that one of us gets into it.
Right? I mean, I was, like, the kid who, like, in middle school and beginnings of high school, while other kids were, like, out drinking at parties and having inappropriate relations, I was like, I wish I was a real Pokemon trainer in the real world. So my dream has come true.
We also have word here that Battle Chasers Night War has been announced. It is currently on Kickstarter, which, you know, I'm kind of trying to move away from. But, you know, I was a big fan of the Battle Chasers comic during its short-lived run back in the 90s. And to see basically a bunch of ex Darksiders folks trying to get together and make a JRPG based on this, you know, well-loved but much-neglected comic book property that's fairly obscure. This is just, hits all the right notes for me. I think the sprite work looks fantastic, and I just really hope this game gets made. You know, these are guys who have made games before, even in shitty situations like the THQ situation. They still got a good product out. I have a lot of faith in them. I believe they're going to deliver, and fingers crossed that this one makes it out the door.
We have news that Rivals of Aether, the indie platform fighter, will be coming out on Steam Early Access on September 22nd. It's been a long time since we talked about this, but it was kind of like a Pokken tournament, I guess you could say, but...
Well, it's actually was very specifically designed to be like a PC Smash game, basically.
Yeah, but also kind of with like Poke Critters.
Well, so the characters are all like furries, basically. Some of them less anthropomorphic than others, but they all control very Smash style. So if you're into like Smash gameplay, this is definitely something you should be looking into when it hits later this month.
Yeah, I want to do that.
And last, but certainly not least, Sega has announced the second compilation of the Sega 3D Classics releases for the 3DS. And the big news is that it's going to have two exclusive 3D Classics on it.
Ooh.
The first is Cult Hit Arcade Racer Power Drift,
nice.
Which is already, you know, super exciting. But the extra bonus is Puyo Puyo 2. So this is definitely something I'd recommend that people who have the ability to import, I definitely recommend you take a look into this because it's good stuff. These are great games. And, you know, fingers crossed that Sega at least will release these games as separate eShop downloads here in North America.
Yeah.
So, Slaggy, unless you have anything else, it's I think it's about time to get down to our discussion.
Oh.
All right. Well, you know, following up on last week's discussion where we talked about all of the mainline Mario games, this week we're going to talk about all as many of the spin-offs as we can.
Yeah. You know, the funny thing is that we talked about how, what was his name supposed to be originally? Captain Video or something? Video Man? But whatever, you know, how the character originally was meant to be someone that could be put in any game. And that's kind of what ended up happening because Mario became so beloved.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, as we're going to talk about here, Mario has been in quite a few puzzle games, quite a few educational games, quite a few racing games, quite a few role-playing games.
Right.
And, you know, even sports games. They've really, Nintendo has really put Mario into everything.
And the thing that's worth noting is that, with a few exceptions, like, these games are still, like, super high quality. Nintendo puts a lot of care into them, and, you know, some of them are very innovative and, you know, highlights of their genre.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. In fact, you know, this first game I want to talk about here is a game that by you know, many people's opinions is one of, you know, the better puzzle games as far as falling block puzzles go. We're talking about Dr. Mario. This released originally on for the NES on July 27th, 1990. I was in Japan, so is the Famicom. But, you know, Dr. Mario is a classic falling block title matching puzzle game. You have various little viruses that are colors, and you get some falling blocks that are the shape of pills, and you have to, you know, match the color of the pills to the color of the virus in it, like a match 3 type setting.
Yeah.
And, you know, I say match 3, but it's actually, I think, match 4. But, you know, it's a great game, very classic take on sort of the Tetris formula. It's very clearly very Tetris, you know, based. And this is a franchise that has really endured.
Yeah.
It got a release on the Game Boy Advance as a part of the classic NES series. It's gotten, like, mini game versions across, like, WarioWare and the Brain Age games. It's gotten ports and, like, eShop releases. It had a Dr. Mario 64 game, which was fundamentally, like, the exact same game, just, you know, with, like, prettier graphics.
Yeah.
It was released on GameCube alongside Panel de Pon and Yoshi's Cookie, both of which we'll talk about a little later.
Yoshi's Tough Cookie.
It released on WiiWare. You know, there was a Dr. Mario Online WiiWare. Prescription. There was Dr. Mario Express for the DSiWare platform. The Wii U last year, or I'm sorry, 2 years ago now. Well, 2 years ago in Japan, last year in North America.
Actually,
we got Dr. Luigi, which was like a Year of Luigi take on Dr. Mario. And yes, Slaggy, you're right. It actually did release in North America in 2013. And
to be fair, it was on New Year's Eve. It was literally like the tail end of the Year of Luigi.
So, yeah, but the point really is that this is one of those games I think a lot of people don't really think of Dr. Mario, but it's just a really classic take on sort of like the themes of like a Tetris style game and a classic like match three, like Columns or Puyo Puyo. And, you know, to me, I think this might have been Nintendo's first real stab at an original design in the falling block puzzle genre, which, you know, we see them sort of dabble with block puzzle games after this, you know, Panel de Pon, certainly, you know, there were games like Yoshi and Yoshi's Cookie, which both have, you know, a similar match sort of gameplay style. So
right,
you know, it's interesting stuff when you really stop and think about, like, this is a long running series of games that for whatever reason I just feel like doesn't come up in conversation a whole lot.
I mean, I guess it has its own kind of special fan base. You know, a lot of people might rather play Puyo Puyo or whatever. So,
and something else I really really feel like is worth pointing out about Dr. Mario, aside from the fact that Dr. Mario is a very popular character in the Smash Brothers series, is that you know, the viruses, because, you know, a lot of times when you think about these spin-off games, you know, they're like one and dones, or they're not referenced across other Mario games. You know, as we talked about last week a little bit, you see a lot of recurring themes, a lot of leitmotifs among the Mario series. The viruses have actually endured as a series villain. They appeared most recently in Mario and Luigi Dream Team on the 3DS, but they've also appeared in other Mario and Luigi games.
Aww.
So, yeah, it's you know, it's cool stuff. This game's super easy to find. Like I said, it's, if you own a Nintendo console, there's a version of Dr. Mario for it.
Yeah.
And in the last 10 years, every platform that has a downloadable store is going to have a version of this game for you.
Yeah.
So
same basic gameplay throughout, you know, like Dr. Luigi had some new modes, so maybe the best one to get currently if you have a Wii U.
Yeah, yeah. So I want to move on, though, because...
Oh, because to your favorite.
Well, my bigger issue is, you know, that we actually, despite, we're probably going to take less time with each game this week than we did last week,
but
simply
we have,
because,
like, five times the amount of games.
Because we are covering like five times the amount of games, and a lot of these games, you know, like a puzzle game, tons of depth when you play it, but talking about it, you basically lay out what the rules of the game are and move on.
And I'm sure we're going to do a puzzle buoy at some point.
Oh, we definitely will do a puzzle buoy at some point, but, you know, what can we say about something like Dr. Mario? We can't look at, like, the individual stage design. You know, it's not that kind of game.
Right.
And Mario's Picross is another game that's kind of like that. This, of course, is the start of Nintendo's fascination with Picross games. And I say that, but I'm actually very happy that this is a thing.
Yeah, love Picross.
I do, in fact. I literally played Dungeons & Dragons yesterday. I brought my 3DS with me to play Picross during other people's turns.
Is that what you were doing?
Well, yeah, because I wanted something that I could, like, play casually without really taking my attention away from the game. So, and in fact, you know, I actually, now that I'm thinking about it, I didn't even play it during game at all. I only played it during break, because...
That's true.
I was actually, you know, I know that the DM of that game is going to be listening to this episode. I was super into what he was laying down, but the group overall was fairly distracted, and I was trying not to add to that, except when I couldn't help but build on Slagkick's dumbass jokes. Because sometimes I can't help it.
Well, you know, I'm sorry, but Brand New Mom was a seminal 80s sitcom, okay?
So, about Mario's Picross, this is a nonogram logic puzzle. Basically, you have a series of rows and columns, and each row and column has like a set of numbers assigned to it, and that is basically the number of marked squares within the grid that you will have within each line and column, or each row and column. And you just sort of have to logic out, like, if this is a 10 square line and it has 9 blocks, then already you can just logic out 8 of the blocks that are supposed to be filled in. Like, that just, you just logic it. And basically, the goal is to logic out an entire, like, map, like an entire grid, in order to reveal a hidden image.
Yeah.
This
picture
game,
crossword.
Pardon?
Picross, picture crossword.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Picture crossword. I'm super into this game. I love it. This was the first Picross game I ever played. Since playing this back when it released on Game Boy, let's see, Japan, March 1995. Oh, and it actually released worldwide within a couple months of that. So cool. It is available on the 3DS Virtual Console as well. And this really got me hooked on Picross as like a game, like as a style of game. To this day, when a new Picross game comes out, it's like a big deal for me.
Like, did you get into like print Picross from it?
You know, I haven't, but only because I'm in North America, and that's not like a super easy thing to get into.
Right, because the whole print Picross sensation was a Japanese thing.
Well, and you know, it's like when you go to the supermarket in North America and you can get like a book of like printed out crossword puzzles and word searches. In Japan, you can get those for Picross.
So
that
basically,
makes me
what you're
super
saying,
mad I'm not in Japan right now.
What you're saying is that when you go to Japan, you're going to buy a bunch of Picross magazines.
That is like almost certainly like a real thing that's going to happen,
years
yes.
worth. But anyways, enough about Picross.
Yeah, so as far as Picross games go, there were three of them, actually. There was Mario's Picross, Mario's Picross 2, which was also on Game Boy but never made it to North America, and Mario's Super Picross, which was a Super Famicom game. You can tell it has the word super in it, and that's how Nintendo rolled back then.
Yep.
These games, they're great, but were not released in English. If you have the means to play Japanese games, though, I'd recommend looking into them. They're super import-friendly, since, you know, if you know how to Picross, knowing the language doesn't really matter that much.
Yeah, and these kind of still live on today with, you know, just not branded as Mario Picross, but, you know, you've been playing a bunch of the Picross on your 3DS.
Yep, absolutely. Let's see. So Super Mario's Picross was released in the EU on Virtual Console as an import title.
Huh.
Both on the Wii and Wii U, which is, you know, very neat. And the Japanese 3DS does have Mario's Picross 2 on the Game Boy Virtual Console. So if you have a Japanese 3DS, and I know several of our listeners do, go check it out.
Okay.
The next one I'd like to talk about, and this is very brief, is Alleyway.
Yeah, this kind of counts.
This is a launch title for the Game Boy, made by Nintendo, designed by Gunpei Yokoi, but it is
as many of the Game Boy titles were.
Yeah, but it is very explicitly like a Breakout / Arkanoid clone. You control a little pod at the bottom of the screen, piloted by Mario. It has Mario's face as your little like lives counter icon, and basically a ball bounces between your ship and the blocks at the top of the screen, and using physics, you sort of have to navigate and predict where the ball is going to hit so that you can, like, bounce it back up, back and forth between the top and bottom of the screen.
Yeah.
This is available on the Virtual Console, as far as I understand. So, you know, it's worth playing. It's not awful. As Arkanoid clones go, it's, like, the best of them.
That's yeah, and something. It has, like, some of the bonus stages are... Or actually, are all the bonus stages like Mario's and Mario sprites, basically?
Many of them are. Many of them are.
Yeah, so it's not really like a Mario. It's just kind of a...
A game in which Mario happens to cameo. But, you know, since they use like his icon as the lives counter and stuff, it's a little bit more than like the Punch-Out cameo, where he's the ref that counts out boxers when you punch them out.
Yeah. Man, Mario's busy.
Mario is busy, especially since he ran a hotel in the mid-90s.
Yeah.
This, of course, was Hotel Mario for the Philips CDI platform.
For his dark ages.
This game was awful. This is, like, the only CDI game I've actually played myself. And, you know, the animation was really awful. Like, the frame rate was poor. There was really unresponsive controls. The game design did not make a lot of, like, logical sense. It was just overall a complete mess.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't developed by Nintendo.
Yeah, well, exactly. It was, you know, it was
developed by
Philips Fantasy Factory. Mm. And...
yeah.
They, unlike Nintendo, didn't have, you know, 20 years of game design experience at this point.
Yeah, so if you're at all familiar with the Link, my boy, from the Philips CDI Zelda game.
I had really hoped we'd get through this conversation without talking about those awful Zelda games.
Well, just I'm saying that people might be a little bit more familiar with, like, Link, my boy, but there were similarly mind-boggling and hideous animation cutscenes in Hotel Mario.
Well, let's wash our mouths of this nonsense and talk about a 1996 game that is one of my favorite puzzle games of all time.
You're talking about Panel de Pon.
Yeah. This was developed by Intelligent Systems and Nintendo R&D1. This was Panel de Pon, also known as Puzzle League, also known as Tetris Attack, which is why we're talking about it here. The North American version of Panel de Pon for Super Famicom, it was brought over to Super Nintendo as Tetris Attack and themed, despite, you know, the name Tetris, it was themed on Super Mario World 2 Yoshi's Island.
Yeah.
You know, it was a great game. Funny enough, you know, this is actually the game that apparently broke the straw that broke the camel's back with regard to the Tetris kerfuffle, you know, Nintendo licensing Tetris exclusively back in the late 80s, early 90s. Apparently, this was the game that set the Tetris company off on, yeah, like, we need to get control of of Tetris back. That's wild to me because this is a fantastic game. You know, it is a match three tiles game. You can control, basically, the tiles rise from the bottom. You need to match three tiles of the same color slash, like, pattern, like, design.
Yeah.
And you can only swap tiles left and right. There's no swapping tiles, like, vertically. So it really sort of is a big change from the style of most block puzzle games. But to me, it is the one that is most, like, logic-based. It's the one that, like, you can most, like, even if you don't really understand how puzzle games work, I feel like you can get into Panel de Pon / Tetris Attack because it's just, it's like, you know, matching colors and shapes. Like, you want to match, you know, a yellow star, three yellow stars, and two blue triangles. Like, you just a little bit of thought, you can figure this one out.
Yeah, it's such a good game.
Fantastic game. You know, another game from that same vintage is the 1994 release Wario's Woods,
the last official NES game in North America.
Yep, absolutely, absolutely. And funny enough, you know, there was actually a Super NES version of this, but not a Super Famicom version.
Really?
That, yeah, absolutely. Which is, you know, somewhat interesting, at least. This is another falling block puzzle game. I don't really care for it that much, but it's almost like a take on, like as far as using somewhat kind of the mechanics from Super Mario USA / Super Mario 2 / Doki Doki Panic. So it basically, you control Toad, you're moving blocks around, like using Toads, like picking things up and putting them back down style. And you want to match colors of monsters to colors of bombs. The game is very basic IMO, but you know, it's an interesting footnote and it's an interesting design. Like, it's an interesting,
yeah,
interpretation of falling block puzzles and bringing in an almost like pseudo platforming mechanic with Toad.
Kind of interesting historical perspective of the first time I believe Birdo was a friendly character.
Oh, well, that is interesting.
AKA Catherine.
This one is available on Virtual Console on the Wii, on the 3DS, and the Wii U for the NES version. The Super Nintendo version, as I understand it, is actually quite rare these days. So that's also something...
Yeah, I always forget that, because I just remember seeing it at, like, Kmart for NES, and I always forget that it even had a Super Nintendo
version. Well, again, it only had a Super Nintendo version in North America, so yeah. It's not, you know, it's not that strange. It's pretty forgotten. We also have here Wrecking Crew.
Yeah.
This was a 1985... more of like an action puzzle game. It's probably most well known in the modern age for having a really bitchy Super Smash Brothers 4 stage based,
yeah,
on it.
And the Golden Hammer.
Yeah, there is that. So basically the player controls Mario or Luigi in two-player mode. You're attempting to destroy like all of the objects in the background of like a set of like stages with a vague like construction theme. So you're like climbing up onto scaffolding, yeah, and breaking down walls. This is one of those games that's pretty silly in the modern age, but at the time I loved this game. I,
yeah,
loved Wrecking Crew
consider,
when I was 6 years old or whatever.
You have to consider this was still before Super Mario Brothers. So it was back when Mario was like a foreman and a plumber, and he had all these odd blue collar jobs.
You said, back when their goal was just to put him in all of their games as sort of like a template, like main character.
Yeah, and the antagonist Spike,
no relation.
Some people interpret him as an early version of Wario.
Oh, fun! I want to talk about two more games here, and then I want to move on, because we are already running a little long. Surprise! Is the 1991 NES release. This was developed by Game Freak and,
yep,
published by Nintendo. This is Yoshi, released in Japan as Yoshi no Tamago, or Yoshi's Egg.
Yep.
This was released in 1991 worldwide. Had versions on the NES, Famicom, and Game Boy platforms. It is available on the Virtual Console for Wii, and on the Virtual Console for Wii U, and the Virtual Console for Nintendo 3DS, including, this was an Ambassador title, so you probably have a copy of this on your 3DS if you were a long-time 3DS owner. Unfortunately, the game is not super good.
It's not that bad. I remember playing it quite a bit.
Okay, well, why don't you explain the gameplay to our listeners then, since you love it.
I don't.
Or since you like it.
I spent a lot of time with it. I was young.
Spent a lot of time with it.
Okay. So it's a falling block game, and the blocks are actually falling enemies. So there's Goombas, Bloopers, Piranha Plants, and Boos. And it's like a match two. It's falling, a vertical falling game. Obviously, because I guess falling wouldn't be horizontal, would it? But, you know, so they fall two at a time, usually from the top. And if you match two vertically, you will be able to clear those enemies. But also there are lower eggshells and upper eggshells, I guess you could call them. And so if you have a bottom eggshell and then have things on top, and then a top eggshell on top of it, it will clear everything. So basically, you just kind of have to balance the doing like a match two with these eggshell pieces. So, it's an interesting take on it.
You know, I talk a lot about how this game is not well-liked. I don't hate it. I think it's all right. I just, again, that for me, that's where it is. I think it's all right. The last game I want to talk about here, though, is Yoshi's Cookie.
Yoshi's Tough Cookie.
This was released in 92 and 93 for the NES/Famicom, Game Boy, and Super Nintendo. It is available on Virtual Console on the Wii, that is, the original Wii, and supposedly it will be coming to the Virtual Console on Wii U, but we don't yet know when. So, that's something that's fairly interesting.
Yoshi's Cookie is just weird.
Yeah, well, exactly. I was trying to, like, I stumbled for a second trying to think of, like, how
bad,
to talk about
it's weird.
It.
It's like Yoshi Rubik's Cube with cookies.
Well, I was just going to say, it's almost more like Yoshi's Rubik's Cube. Like, it's weird because it's more like sliding entire rows of cookies to try and make a match. You know, you're trying to match cookies, which sounds delicious, make no mistake. But as a game, it's pretty weird. I feel like this game doesn't have, like, a big fan base. I'm not really that surprised by that because it's kind of a weird one. But funny enough, you know, some games magazines do bring it up every now and then. They talk about how, like, you know, it's a well-known... Or, I'm sorry, a lot of times you hear people talk about how it's, you know, a simple but addictive game.
And you'll see, like, random references, like Double Dash, for example, had one of the battle levels was Cookie Land.
Oh, interesting.
I'm surprised there's not a Yoshi Cookie Smash stage.
Ah, I'm actually kind of surprised about that, too. And, you know, there's also a somewhat similar game in the Game & Watch Gallery 3 for Game Boy Color that released in 1999. They took the game Egg and gave it, like, a Yoshi's Cookie aesthetic. So, you know, Yoshi's Cookie, it pops up here and there. It's a weird game. It's not bad. You know, I'd rather play Yoshi's Cookie than Yoshi. And plus, the box art has art of Yoshi eating a cookie, which is pretty cute. So,
yeah.
But, you know, that's the quality of game we're talking about. We're literally talking about the box art. So, let's move on, though, from puzzle games to racing games, because we still got a lot of ground to cover.
Wait, didn't we already cover the Mario racing games?
Well, okay, so we covered the Mario Kart games. So that was episode 57. And, you know, we really went all in, talked for a couple of hours about every Mario Kart game. I don't want to rehash that here. Mario Kart's one of those games everyone has opinions on. Everyone has played, to some degree, the Mario Kart games. We love these games here in studio, but we're not going to talk about them today. I don't think we can add to what we already did. So yeah. I'd recommend you just head over to GameBuie.org.
GameBuie.org.
And, check out episode 57. So instead, what we're going to talk about is the F1 series.
Mean like the alleyway of the Mario Racing series?
kind of, yeah. And we'll just talk about all three in one go because they're, you know, basically the same game over and over.
Well, they're all basically pole position.
Well, exactly. But
in those days, what racing game wasn't basically pole position?
Exactly. So there was the original game. It was released on Famicom November 2nd, 1984, but it was ported to the Game Boy, and it released on Game Boy in 1990 and 1991 worldwide. It was a big deal because it had the four-player hub so that you could do, you know, the game link or whatever they called multiplayer on the Game Boy with up to four players. So this was a big deal. This game was really in demand back then. And, you know, the Mario connection is actually really tenuous because Mario, Luigi, Peach, Toad, Bowser, Link, Samus, Pit, and DK appear at the end of race circuits when they're doing, like, the trophy handoff ceremony. And something interesting, you know, is that Tetris actually did that. The NES version of Tetris, when you complete the, is it the B-type stages? They have a similar trophy ceremony with Samus, Pit, Link, Bowser, Toad, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, I always forget that because my Tetris of choice was the Game Boy version. But again, this isn't Puzzle Buoy.
Indeed. And, you know, actually, it turns out we don't really have a whole lot to say about F1 Race. Don't really have a lot to say about the Mario racing games here. I really just wanted to call attention to the fact that we did a whole episode effectively on Mario racing games.
Yeah, I've never even played F1 Race, to be honest.
Well, it's, you know, it's a solid game. It's not amazing.
I mean, I kind of want to because I love Pole Position. I mean, I love Pole Position.
Yeah, Pole Position is great. I mean, it's, you know, like, fundamental in terms of, like, video game racing games.
Gentlemen, start your engines, because Pole Position is fundamental.
Well, then let's switch tracks here and talk about some Mario RPG games.
Switch tracks.
Yes, like that was intentional.
Racing tracks?
That was intentional.
You're clever.
So, in 1996, Nintendo sort of broke ground as far as doing something really radical with the Mario series of games. Worked with Square to do a Mario RPG, titled, appropriately enough, Super Mario RPG.
Legend of the Seven Stars.
The North American version is subtitled Legend of the Seven Stars, but the Japanese version had no subtitle.
It's just Super Mario RPG.
So, you know, the game, it contains, like, the hallmarks of the Super Mario series, but also of, like, the Final Fantasy series, which, you know, back then, Squaresoft was all about Final Fantasy. They didn't, you know, they weren't Square Enix yet. They didn't have Dragon Quest. So, music was done by still young Yoko Shimomura-san, whom we talk about here on the show all the time.
Oh, yeah.
And it actually had a really, at the time, very unique, very new, very fresh battle system because all of your attacks were augmented by timed button presses. And all of your defensive moves timed button presses. So, like, if you're controlling Bowser, because Bowser was a party member in this game, and, you know, you're getting attacked, if you press the right button as Bowser's getting attacked, you'll see him, like, duck his head and take less damage. This was a big deal. Turn-based RPGs did not do this in the mid-90s.
Yeah.
You see stuff like this a little more often these days, but at the time, this was so fresh.
And this is a game that has so much love. I mean,
oh, yes. Everyone loves this game. And, you know, something that was funny was, in a lot of ways, you know, everyone looks at Final Fantasy VII as, like, the first big-selling JRPG, but Super Mario RPG did well worldwide. So, you know, it's definitely something to take note of. Also, you know, this game used a very similar sprite technology to Donkey Kong Country, using the same, like, pre-rendered 3D sprites that were, you know, not rendered in real time, but they were rendered and then turned into sprites frame by frame. And in this game, that includes, like, doing rendering animations for every equipable weapon and digitizing them. So,
yeah,
a lot of work went into this game. It has a very interesting, very specific art style. Music, obviously, Shimomura-san is fantastic. Prior to this, her best-known work was Street Fighter II.
Even the original characters people have a soft spot for.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, this game, funny enough, it's never really gotten, like, a lot of love in terms of, like, ports.
Yeah, it does not have a virtual console release, does it?
Well, it does. It has a Wii virtual console release.
Oh, okay, does it?
It does, yes. But it does not have a Wii U virtual console release. There's no way to play it on, like, the DS or 3DS. So, you know, that really, really sucks a lot because it's a fantastic game. To me, this is an absolute must play. If you've never played it, if you like Final Fantasy, I really feel like you need to check this game out.
And man, it's really time for another one since Square and Nintendo have long buried the hatchet.
Well, you know, you say that, but, you know, in Japan, the Mario and Luigi series are literally known as Mario and Luigi RPG.
That's true.
So
but I mean,
it is very much set up as a set of sequels.
Yeah.
In Japan, especially.
I'm just saying, just imagine if Square got back on board.
Now, something interesting about this is that, you know, Super Mario RPG was the root, but the sequels, they're actually two different branches of sequels, so to speak. The first, and we'll talk about all of these games as a bunch, are the the Paper Mario games.
Yes.
Paper Mario is a Nintendo 64 game released in Japan in 2000 and in North America, EU, and Australia in 2001. Has been released on the Virtual Console for Wii and the Wii U Virtual Console. This was in Japan released as Mario Story, and when it was in development, it was actually very specifically called Super Mario RPG 2. You know, Paper Mario, especially in the early days, is a straightforward RPG, which includes some, like, Mario, like, the overworld includes Mario style, like jumping, hitting blocks, interacting with the world with like hammers in some cases. And interestingly, because the sort of aesthetic is a 3D world with 2D characters, hence Paper Mario, everyone is walking around looking like a piece of paper in this 3D world, the game would actually sometimes play with the paper concept, and you'd have characters like slipping through cracks in the 3D polygonal world as if they were a piece of paper sliding through. Later iterations would build on that to the point of giving you paper abilities like folding yourself into a paper airplane or what have you. So just really inventive, really,
really
fresh
charming.
Stuff. Super charming. Again, you know, I'd call this a must play. And luckily this one, again, like I said, is available on the Wii U Virtual Console, and I'd recommend you check it out. Saggy, what are your thoughts on Paper Mario?
Just a lot of fun. Very accessible. So, I mean, it's probably great if you have little ones and you want them to have, like, a intro to RPGs without it being too daunting. And Captain Spike's like, screw that. If I have a kid, they're going to be starting out on Final Fantasy VI.
When I have a kid, they will play Final Fantasy on the NES. If it worked for me, it will work for them. Bazooka Joe Gum.
All right.
The next game in this series was Paper Mario Thousand Year Door. In Japan, this was released as Paper Mario RPG. And this is one of those games that comes up in conversations as, like, best game of all time. Like, I know quite a few people who, to this day, truly believe this is the best game of all time. And I can't fault them for that too much. Released worldwide on the GameCube in 2004. It has never gotten a port to date, which effing sucks, let me tell you, because it's a fantastic game. And this has a really unique visual style. You know, it does the three-dimensional environments and two-dimensional characters again, but this is the first one where the fact that the characters are all two-dimensional is really highlighted. So Mario folds himself into a paper airplane,
yes.
Like I mentioned. He folds himself at one point into like a little boat,
yes.
Rolls up into like a roll of paper as if he was a poster. That's just very cute. Has actually a really fairly good story to the game. Bowser has some really interesting, like super cute, like 2D action stages. A lot of the same JRPG style combat, a little bit of a reduced focus on like stats maybe from some of the other games in this series, but it's overall just very, very cool. Fantastic stuff. I would, again, you know, recommend this as a must play, but the problem is it's not easy to play in the modern age.
Yeah, unless you saved your GameCube, which you should have.
Well, there is that.
I love the GameCube.
I love the GameCube too, but after this, things take a little bit of a turn for the weird, and the Paper Mario series loses its RPG identity a little bit.
Yeah.
That happens with Super Paper Mario,
which is still a really fun game, don't get us wrong.
Which released in 2007 for the Wii platform. It is a lot of fun, but it's a little bit more of like a side-scrolly platform puzzler with, you know, some of the traditional elements. You still have some world maps that you're traversing in 3D space, but there's a lot more of a focus on like platforming and using Mario's like special like flip abilities when I say flip, you know, it's actually very interesting because Mario gets the ability early in the game to sort of flip from a 2D world to a 3D world. And so you're sort of working on, like, looking at the same areas in 2D and 3D to explore and try to sort of figure out where to go and find
be like,
items
oh, there was a
and
path
enemies
back
you're looking
there that
for.
I wouldn't have been able to see.
I'm sorry,
2D.
What was that?
I was just like, oh, this stage has a path back there that I couldn't have seen if I hadn't flipped to 3D.
Yeah, well, exactly. So it's a cool game, still super easy to find copies of for you know, affordable prices.
I feel like it's not super well-loved, and that makes me a little sad. I enjoyed it a lot.
This game is super not well-loved. I think it's because it's not an RPG. I mean, on a fundamental level, a lot of the RPG stuff is out the door with this game. This game, its closest tie to being an RPG is probably that, you know, there is an experience point system, and it has dialogue bubbles. But, like, the level design and, like, the actual mechanics of what you're doing, it's not really, like, command line-based RPG or whatever. And I think for a lot of people, they couldn't overcome that.
Yeah.
So, overall, I would still say it's worth playing. But where we get to that maybe not being the case would be Paper Mario Sticker Star for the 3DS. Now, Sticker Star takes things back a little bit. We go back to the turn-based battle system. But, you know, while the game is in a lot of ways the cutest Paper Mario has ever been, because it's super cute. Like, even the world, even though it's in 3D, it's still, everything is, like, designed to look like papercraft. It's a really great, adorable aesthetic. But unfortunately, the gameplay is boring as shit. It's very basic. It's based around, like, finding stickers and using them, so it always feels like, especially if you're, like, a longtime JRPG player, it constantly feels like you're hoarding your best attacks because, you know, they're a resource, and you don't want to run out of your combat resources.
Yeah.
It's like when you get to Final Fantasy VI at the end, you're like, how the hell do I have 3 Megalixirs? It's like, oh yeah, because I've literally never used one, and now I never will. And that's, you know, that happens in Super Paper Mario. This was a 3DS release in 2012
worldwide.
I'm sorry,
Paper Mario Sticker Star, you mean.
I'm sorry, what did I call it?
Super Paper Mario.
Oh yeah, I'm talking about Paper Mario Sticker Star. It's I wouldn't call it a bad game. I don't really think it's awful. It's just, to me, the weakest point of the Paper Mario series. Slaggy, have you put a lot of time into this one?
No, I have it, but I just haven't really spent a lot of time. Like, I don't think it's inherently bad. It's just, it's, you know, if you're, like you said, a longtime fan of the earlier Paper Marios, it's definitely kind of, you know, like you said, Paper Mario kind of stopped being RPG-ish.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, luckily, and we'll talk about this in just a second, luckily the RPG slack did get picked up. And that makes it, in retrospect, easier to like Sticker Star than it was when it first came out. But it's still, to me, a lackluster game. I mean, that's just beginning and end. It's lackluster. It's not bad. It's just not as good as it should be.
Yeah.
So we're going to rewind here. We're going to go back to the Game Boy Advance era. Because, you know, I had mentioned that Mario RPG begat two sort of sub-series of Mario RPG games. This is the other subset. This game, this first one we're going to talk about, was released in North America as Mario & Luigi Superstar Saga. In Japan, it was called Mario & Luigi RPG. This was developed by Alpha Dream and released on the Game Boy Advance worldwide in late November 2003, which, by the way, I think is awesome that, you know, Nintendo moved in this direction to get these things out worldwide faster in shorter windows. Mario RPG, no, still not right. Superstar Saga Mario & Luigi is a really cool game, very much follows, you know, sort of what Nintendo was sort of trying to do with Mario RPG. You control Mario and Luigi in battle, fully turn-based with the timing-based attacks. From a gameplay perspective, it's very much a sequel to Mario RPG.
Yeah, and actually, Alpha Dream was founded by Tetsuo Mizuno-san, who was formerly a president of Squaresoft.
Oh, that's awesome. And, you know, it's a great game, plays like a straight-up sequel to Super Mario RPG in a lot of ways. Like, it might not, strictly speaking, be a direct sequel, but from a gameplay perspective, it really does seem like it. And something really cool is that this game is available worldwide on the Wii U Virtual Console. If you haven't played it, I think you should. I think you should make a point to it. It's a good experience, even still. And, you know, something that's super funny is this game has a fantastic localization. Just a ton of personality, a ton of jokes in the script. It's very, very cool. And, you know, you saw some character cameos from characters you don't see as often, including Birdo, who I know know Slaggy is a big fan of.
Love my Catherine.
Of course, the sequel to this was a DS title, also available on the Wii U Virtual Console, so you can check this one out if you'd like. This is Mario & Luigi Partners in Time, or as it's known in Japan, Mario & Luigi 2 RPG 2x2. It's called Mario & Luigi RPG 2x2 because the game sort of connects to this story of Yoshi's Island,
yeah,
where baby Mario and baby Luigi are sort of like warped through time to join regular Mario and regular Luigi. And the whole game is about like time travel, and it's played for jokes.
Wibbly wobbly timey wimey.
Yes, wibbly wobbly timey wimey. The game gets very gimmicky in terms of using like split screen stuff, since the DS, you know, had two screens. But it, even though it's gimmicky, it's fun gimmicky. It's a lot of fun. Has a, you know, a Professor Egad from Super Mario Sunshine is one of the main characters of the story, which is, you know, good for fans of the series. Just a lot of nods to the Mario canon. Koji Kondo did some music for it, which obviously is always a great thing. Also, the most of the music was done, again, by Yoko Shimomura, who also did the music for Mario & Luigi Superstar Saga. So, just again, you know, this was, in a lot of ways, the real successor to Super Mario RPG. Great game, lots of fun. I definitely recommend you check it out. And again, you know, it's on Virtual Console, so it's easy to find.
Yeah.
That game saw a sequel on the same platform, amusingly. Or... amusingly, I should say surprisingly. This one is Mario & Luigi Bowser's Inside Story, known in Japan as Mario & Luigi RPG 3. This was a DS game released in late 2009 in most regions, except for Japan, who got it somewhat earlier. Again, composed by Yoko Shimomura, again developed by Alpha Dream. Inside Story is a really interesting game because it primarily takes place inside of Bowser.
Oh my.
Which, yeah, a lot of people are, you know, probably all about. So, from a gameplay perspective, sort of the same hallmarks of the series apply to, you know, these games. It's all, you know, role-playing games, turn battle system, timing accuracy for extra damage. And, you know, it's good stuff. These games were all pretty popular. Tons of fun. This one is not available on the Wii U Virtual Console yet, but I feel like it's probably an inevitability.
Yeah, and I mean, DS games, not too hard to find.
Well, you know, the thing is, DS games are fairly easy to find, but you have to be careful not to get bootleg copies. There's a lot of bootleg copies of some of these games out there, so you just have to be careful. But this, again, great game. The writing was super funny, as it would have to be.
A lot of people really love it.
For a game that largely takes place inside of Bowser, of course it's funny. Like, it has to be. So, it's a cool game. Lots of fun. I definitely recommend you check it out. Which brings us to the most recent release in the series. This was the 3DS title released in the summer of 2013 worldwide. Mario & Luigi Dream Team. And this actually came out when Game Boy was a thing.
Yep.
So, it's
you
a really...
You heard of the Mean Team? You heard of the Dream Team? Well, we're the Mean Team.
Yeah, so this is a really cool game in
this
terms
was
of...
part of the Year of Luigi.
Yeah, it was a Year of Luigi game. Again, you know, follows the standard tropes of the Mario & Luigi series. In Japan, it was called Mario & Luigi RPG 4 Dream Adventure.
Sounds like Dream Adventure
Australia,
sounds like a Freddy Krueger movie.
In Europe and Australia, it was called Mario & Luigi Dream Team Bros.
Aww.
So, yeah, right? It's a really cute, fun game. My only problem with it is that it runs really long. Like, this game seriously takes like 60 hours to get through.
Wow.
Which is just a lot. Like, you're not even really done with the tutorials until almost 10 hours into the game.
Okay, that's a little, yeah.
Yeah, it's a bit much. But once you get going, it's a lot of fun. It's just a slog to get there. But this game has some really cute ideas. It's strange and fun. And that's, if I had to sum this game up in one line, strange and fun.
Yeah.
Again, Alpha Dream and Yoko Shimomura, sort of the dream team on these games. And that brings us to the upcoming title releasing on 3DS in spring of 2016. This is Mario & Luigi Paper Jam.
Paper Jam.
releasing in Europe and Australia as Mario & Luigi Paper Jam Bros.
Jam Bros.
And in Japan as Mario & Luigi RPG Paper Mario Mix, which tells you exactly what this game is. It is a direct crossover between the Paper Mario and Mario & Luigi series. I'm super excited for this game. I think it's going to be fantastic. I like the Paper Mario series. Even when it's bad, at least it's trying new things. I love the Mario & Luigi series for just being like the Mario, the Mario RPG series. So I'm very eager to see how these things play off each other. I'm really interested in playing this game, and this is definitely one you'll be hearing a lot more about from us, as we get towards its release and once it is released.
Yeah.
Psyche, do you have anything to say about that?
No, just that overall, the Mario and Luigi series is, kind of, I'd say a little bit more obscure, but has a really passionate fan base. Like, a lot of people love Fawful, who is, like, the main villain of the series, and, that kind of the interesting tidbit of that is that Bill Trinan from the Nintendo Treehouse, when they were localizing, kind of were able to infuse their own character however they wanted to kind of characterize him. So I think that was kind of cool. Since he was not an already established villain, they were kind of able to shape him into the way they wanted him portrayed.
Excellent, excellent.
A lot of people love Fawful. He's just like, he's crazy.
Yeah.
He's so crazy.
So I want to talk about the Mario sports games now.
Although, I was just thinking, we did forget one little tidbit that could go in the puzzle entry, but...
Well, shoot it, bro.
I mean, I guess technically puzzles is where we should have talked about it, but it's kind of its own little
thing. Oh my god, what is it?
Mario versus Donkey Kong.
Oh, shit! How did we not talk about... Okay, yeah, you're right.
Because the thing is that, I guess, for all intents and purposes, it is a puzzle game, but I think of it more of a puzzle game in the way that, like, Lemmings is a puzzle game, you know?
Yeah, well, I think the thing for me is, I fundamentally think of them as Donkey Kong games. I don't think of them as Mario games, but you're totally right. So the thing is, Mario versus Donkey Kong is a series. It has like six games in it now. Mario versus Donkey Kong, Mario versus Donkey Kong 2, March of the Minis, Mario versus Donkey Kong Minis March Again, Mario versus Donkey Kong Miniland Mayhem, Mario versus Donkey Kong Minis on the Move, and the most recent Mario versus Donkey Kong Tipping Stars. The thing is, this series, you can really trace it back to the Game Boy version of the original Donkey Kong. This game added new abilities to Mario for the first time, and rather than the simple, like four stages of the original game, it actually had like 96 stages.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about this briefly here on the show before. I'm a big fan of this game. I think it's absolutely fantastic. It added Mario's backflip, where, you duck and then do an extra high jump, originated in Mario 64, but it's also present in, actually it might have originated in this game, but is also in Mario 64. But anyway, just a fantastic game, this Game Boy Donkey Kong game. And it sort of brought, by bringing Donkey Kong back to the forefront with all of these new mechanics and new designs, people were interested in seeing more of this.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really where Mario versus Donkey Kong comes into play, where it's basically, it's a Game Boy Advance game done by Nintendo Software Technology, released in 2004, and it's basically like a new Mario or a new Donkey Kong game.
Yeah, and I guess I see what you're saying, because Donkey Kong is really kind of weird because it's, the start of DK's whole thing, but also, it really is also the start of Mario, so it's kind of a weird gray area.
Well, absolutely, and that's why it slipped through the cracks. But, Mario versus Donkey Kong is a fantastic game. It's pretty much like new Donkey Kong, which in 2004 was a really big deal.
Yeah.
And basically, at the end of every game, you would rescue the mini Marios. And that's why, the later games in the series became almost like Lemmings clones. The March of the Mini games. I like the March of the Minis games a lot. All of the Minis games, I should say. Fantastic. But again, they're not really Mario games. They feature Mario, so you're right, we should be talking about them, but it's really just aesthetic. Like some of these other silly games we've talked about today, where we've talked like two sentences about a game, and it's like, okay, Mario just appears at the end sequence, so that's it.
Yeah.
That's sort of, Mario versus Donkey Kong doesn't really leverage Mario or Donkey Kong very well. Like, this could easily have been a totally unrelated game, with some other IP attached, and it would have been the exact same game.
Although it's kind of cool that they used this series as a way to bring back Pauline.
I would definitely agree
from
there.
The Donkey Kong series.
Although, again, that really sells the fact that it's a Donkey Kong game.
Yeah. Not,
but, you know, again, Mario features, and if we were going to talk about fucking Arkanoid or Breakout or Alleyway.
I was going to say, I'm not going to judge you for that because basically, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, they're all great games. They've been released across, you know, the Game Boy Advance, the DS, the Wii U, the 3DS. I think they're all worth playing. Mario vs. Donkey Kong itself, the original one, is a very distinctly different game, though, from all of the rest of the minis
games. Right, much more platforming involved.
It was released on a... So it was a virtual console game for the 3DS Ambassador Program. So you may have this already. Tons of fun, I think. It is, though, again, it's basically new Donkey Kong. Released in Japan on the Wii U Virtual Console in Japan with a date to be announced in the rest of the world. So we may get this someday. And if we do, I highly recommend you play it. I think it's a superb game. All of the others, the minis games, once it gets to that point, Tipping Stars actually has a Mario Maker style, like, edit mode, which is what the whole Tipping Stars thing is all about. We've talked about it here on the show. Great game, especially if you like Lemmings, but they're all basically the same game. You have a bunch of little Marios running around, and you have to sort of work out, like, placing blocks and manipulating switches to get Marios through a stage without them walking off a cliff to their own demise.
Yep.
It's fun stuff, but I don't have a lot to say about it other than if you like that style of game, you have a lot of game that you get to go through moving forward.
Yep.
Let's talk about the Mario Tennis series, Slaggy.
Yeah.
The first Mario Tennis game was actually a Virtual Boy title, and we talked about that a couple weeks ago here on the show. Released in 1995, a stereoscopic 3D game. Not a lot of meat to the game other than the basic tennis mechanics.
Yeah, like, and, I mean, I guess technically you could say that tennis for NES and Famicom was the first, because Mario was the ref, but again, that's more like Punch-Out. We're not going to be... This is not Super Cameo Brothers.
If we listed literally every game Mario cameos in, and I know we mentioned a couple, but if we mentioned literally everyone, we'd basically be talking about every game made by Nintendo for the first 2 years of the NES.
That's true.
And the Game Boy. So the first real Mario Tennis game, Virtual Boy, 1995... But that game design was expanded upon in 2000 for the Nintendo 64 and Game Boy Color. Mario Tennis, not Mario's. This was actually developed by Camelot Software Planning.
Yep.
And the cool thing about Camelot Software Planning, they used to work very closely with Sega on the Shining series, which is one of my personal favorite series of all time. They specifically worked on Shining Force and Shining Force 2, which, again, two of my favorite games of all time. They ended up coming over to Mario Tennis. They created Waluigi, which came about after Nintendo requested a Wario-style counterpart for Luigi during the development of Mario Tennis.
The Waluigi fandom basically worships Camelot.
Yes, we do. So the really cool thing about Mario Tennis is that it actually is like a full-on tennis JRPG. It has an overworld, it has, like, characters that you can create and, like, customize and take through, like, a whole little, like, tennis story. So it's cool stuff. Really solid tennis gameplay married to a little storyline with, you know, customization and, you know, RPG stuff.
It had some cool transfer pack functionality, too.
Yeah, you could take your characters from the Game Boy version, move them over to the N64 version, and unlock new courts and tournaments that way. So it was very cool, really neat stuff.
Because the GBC version was all, like, just basic humans, right?
Yes. Yeah, you really had to have both in order to access all of the extra cool stuff, you know, for both games, which, controversial decision at the time, and people would hate it now. But at the time, it was neat to have access to all of this stuff. This game did get a sequel, also developed by Camelot Software Planning, for the GameCube in 2004. This is cool. You know, it still retains all of the really neat stuff of the N64 version. It's just a really well-designed, well-played game. Had some really cool, like, tennis-themed mini-games that they called gimmick courts, where, like, it would be like, oh, you have a bunch of piranha plants. You have to hit all of them with tennis balls.
Mm-hmm.
That just really cute, fun stuff that was a lot of fun to play. This actually got a port for the Wii, so it is still something that you can play from time to time. Yeah, as the in the new Play Control series. And that version got a Nintendo Select re-release in North America and EU just a couple years ago. So you can sometimes even still find this, like, at Walmart, since, you know, they never really update their game sections.
Right.
So, you know, it's a really cool game, followed up by the Game Boy Advance Mario Tennis Power Tour game. This released in 2005 worldwide. It did get a Wii U Virtual Console release. Man, that Wii U Virtual Console has filled out a lot on Game Boy Advance games, mm-hmm. which is awesome. And, you know, again, Camelot software planning. You have, like, an RPG mode and everything. Little story going on. It's just, it's a really good game. And as always, you know, the real core of it, the tennis mechanic, is fantastic. And that's really the thing, you know. Nintendo does this thing sometimes where they'll let the same studio develop a game for forever because that studio is very good at that kind of game. That definitely goes for Camelot and the Mario Tennis games.
Yeah.
The tennis mechanics are always so solid. Like, who wouldn't want to have them do this? And the next game in this series, still developed by Camelot, was Mario Tennis Open. This was a 3DS game that released in May of 2012 worldwide. Does not feature any RPG elements.
Boo!
But, you know, still has that core, fantastic tennis mechanic going on. Game reviewed really well at release. You know, it's again, you know, to me, the one problem is that I missed the RPG stuff. Like, I kind of need that to really get invested. I own this game. I've only played it a couple hours, though, because, again, you know, without the RPG stuff, for me, it's like, this is what I play when I want really great tennis.
Yeah.
But sometimes I want more, and this game doesn't do it for me then.
Do we know if Ultra Smash is going to have the RPG elements?
Well, so the next game in this series is going to be Mario Tennis Ultra Smash. This is going to be releasing in holiday 2015 for the Wii U. It is developed by Camelot Software Planning, but unfortunately, other than the fact that the game exists and the graphics are quite pretty, we don't know a whole lot about the game yet. Traditionally, the RPG elements are more heavily featured in the handheld iterations of the series. So my guess would be no, but since the last handheld one, the one we were just talking about, Mario Tennis Open, did not have RPG mechanics, I'm really hoping Ultra Smash does.
Then it will be an Ultra Smash for your 2015 games.
Either way, it's 100% reliable that Ultra Smash is going to have great tennis gameplay. Definitely something to look forward to moving forward. Slaggy, do you have anything else to say about the Mario Tennis series?
No, just that they're really well-liked.
Excellent. Well, then let's talk about Camelot Software Planning's other Mario sports series. This one is Mario Golf.
Another one that's really well-liked.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, I remember, I think part of the reason I like the Mario Golf series a lot is I remember playing a lot of NES Open Tournament Golf, which, similar to just tennis for NES, there was golf in NES Open Tournament Golf, which pseudo featured Mario and Luigi and Peach and Daisy, but
yeah, again, you know, they were in the game as cameos, which was cool, but not, you know, we're trying to move a little bit away from that because, again, we're deeper into this episode than we really wanted to be. So, you know, this, again, like Mario Tennis, Mario Golf released on the N64 as Mario Golf 64, and it had a Game Boy Color version, Mario Golf Game Boy. The Game Boy version, just like tennis, has a whole role-playing game set of stuff going on. Experience points, a story. Mario Golf for N64 is available on the Wii Virtual Console, but not the Wii U Virtual Console, unfortunately. The Game Boy Color version is available on the Wii U Virtual Console as of just a few weeks ago, in fact. So, you know, again, like the tennis series, this applies here as well.
Wait, were you saying game. It wasn't on the Wii U Virtual Console?
The N64 version is not.
Apparently, it just did about 10 days ago.
I'm pretty sure that's the Game Boy Color version.
Oh, shit, you're right, I see.
Oh, snap, you're right. I totally misread my notes on this. Fantastic, Slaggy. Thank you for that correction.
Although, you can play this game. Yeah.
You can play this game on the Wii U Virtual Console if you are so inclined. And in fact, the Game Boy Color version is only available on the Virtual Console for 3DS. Good catch, Slaggy. These are great games if you're interested in golf. You know, it's funny because there was a 3DS version of Mario Golf. We're going to talk about it in a few minutes. I actually don't think it's as good as the Game Boy Color one. So I would rather play the Game Boy Color one, which is a little silly, but whatever. Overall, good stuff. Definitely worth your time. And I'd recommend you check it out.
Yeah.
The next game in the series was Mario Golf Toadstool Tour. This was, again, developed by Camelot. For the Nintendo GameCube. Did not, unfortunately, have the RPG stuff, but it did have, like, tournaments. So, you know, it still had stuff going on. And once again, you know, the game maybe was a little light, but...
You know, just good solid golf.
But it was good solid golf, exactly. So it's overall good stuff. Definitely something I'd recommend checking out. Released for the GameCube in 2003 in most regions, except Australia and EU. It actually released in 2004 for reasons I will never, ever, ever understand. But again, you know, it was a really pretty game for its time. Really cool as far as, like, the way the physics worked and stuff.
Yeah.
Definitely something I'd look into if you're trying to play all the Mario Golf games. Around that same time, or a little later, in 2004, Camelot made Mario Golf Advance Tour. This, again, is a JRPG-style game. Fantastic experience. This is a really great game. A lot of really cool stuff going on.
Don't you mention this as, like, your favorite Mario Golf game?
I do, because again, you know, the RPG stuff is fantastic. Just having, you know, the golf, solid golf mechanics paired with leveling up and questing and stuff, it shouldn't work on paper, it sounds stupid, but it is so fun. And this one, again, you know, is available on the Wii U Virtual Console, worldwide, you can check it out right now. To me, it's super fun. I think this is a great game that everyone should play. So, that brings us to Mario Golf World Tour, which is the 3DS game. And, you know, Camelot did make this. It does have light RPG stuff, but very, 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 very light. Like, literally, like, you go through a country club and talk to people, but, like, all of the stats and XP and stuff are all gone. It just has, like, a very little basic world for you to interact with.
That's cute.
And it's a cute presentation. The game... It teaches you how to play it. It has a ton of tutorials. If you're into tutorials, man, this is your game. But for me, it just misses the mark a little bit. Like, I feel like Camelot added kind of more complex gameplay than they had typically had. It's still not as complex as something like EA's Tiger Woods golf games.
Mm-hmm.
But for the Mario Golf series, it's a little more complex, and I actually think it works to the game's detriment. It's still not bad, and, you know, maybe if I were to put more time into it, I'd get even more into it, because, you know, I played it for a fair bit of time when it came out, and then just went back to the Game Boy Advance Mario Golf game.
Yeah. I mean, it was the first Mario Golf in a decade, so, you know, they were maybe a little rusty at them.
Yeah. And, you know, I will say, I think it's a shame that we don't have, like, an Ultra Golf coming out. Like, we have a Mario Tennis Ultra Smash.
There's always next year.
Well, there is always next year. Fingers crossed, except...
Or the NX.
You know, yeah. Well, exactly. So, still, overall, probably, you know, it's a good game. It's just, to me, one of the weaker entries in the series. Which always sucks to say about, like, the most recent iteration of a series, but it is what it is. Next, I want to talk about a smaller series of games. This is the Mario Baseball series. Starts with Mario Superstar Baseball, known in Japan as Super Mario Stadium Miracle Baseball. This is actually a joint development project with Namco.
Namco Bandai.
They were not Namco Bandai yet. They were just Namco at the time. And this was for the GameCube in 2005. The game was very specifically made to be along the lines of Mario Golf and Mario Tennis. And it had a sequel. We'll talk about it in a minute. It's overall just, you know, like an entry-level baseball game. Mario themes going on. Mario characters are on your team. The game mechanics are very simple. But it's overall a lot of fun. Released in 2005, like I mentioned. And it's actually just a really solid, very basic baseball game. Have you played this one, Slaggy?
I haven't.
So, you know, it's overall a solid baseball game. You should play it sometime, Slaggy. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
What about its sequel, Mario Super Sluggers? Did you play that one?
I did, and I missed out totally on the Mario Baseball. And it's surprising that there's only been these two, because, I mean, baseball is huge in Japan.
Well, it's huge everywhere. Or it should be. Mario Super Sluggers was released in 2008 for the Wii. It does have, like, optional motion controls, which are, you know, somewhat controversial. The thing to me that I noticed was I actually felt like this game was really pretty. I know that a lot of Wii games weren't exactly lookers, but I thought it was a good-looking game. The game, again, very basic baseball, but if you like baseball, then I would definitely recommend you check this out.
Yeah, it was a Kids' Choice Award nominee, but lost to Guitar Hero World Tour.
Womp, womp.
I wonder if Reggie got gacked or something.
And, you know, very similar to that
two-game... Hey, Backpack, two game... is mapping you tonight?
Very similar to that two-game series, we have another two-game sports series here.
Which is another one. I'm surprised that there's only two.
In the form of Mario Strikers, released in the PAL regions as Mario Football. Mario Smash Football. This was actually developed by Next Level Games. It released in... on the GameCube in 2005 and 2006 worldwide.
I love the box art, BT-dubs.
Has a fantastic aesthetic. Yeah, I love the art for these two Strikers games. It's just, it's like a very, like, kinetic style, art style, very, like, line heavy. It's just, it's really cool. It's super cool art. If nothing else, right now, if you're listening to this, go just Google Super Mario Strikers box art, because that art is so good. And it's, you know, it's a straightforward soccer game. I think it's a lot of fun. It's a little bit anemic. There, again, you know, I think we were all sort of spoiled by Camelot's work on the golf and tennis series. Because now all of these other sports, when they don't have RPGs, it's just like, there's not a whole lot going on here.
Well, would you say it's better than Mega Man Soccer?
Yeah. Oh, it's loads better. Like, Mega Man Soccer is hardly like a real game. And this is like a real game, at least. So, you know, that's something. It's a lot of fun, though. It did bring, like, super moves into the game, which once in a while you can use these super moves, super strikes, I'm sorry they were called. And basically, like, you could, like, get bonus points for scoring a goal. You could, like, freeze enemies and have effects on them. So it was cool in either way. Really great gameplay, I felt. That was my big thing, was I thought the gameplay was super tight, ultra responsive. I thought that all of the characters having, like, their super abilities sort of mixed things up, but since everyone had a different one that had a somewhat similar net effect, no pun intended, it felt better balanced than you might expect. The next game in the series was Mario Strikers Charged, which in the E regions was Mario Strikers Charged Football. This one was also developed by Next Level Games, released on the Wii in 2007 worldwide. Basically the same game, just with prettier graphics and support for online tournaments.
Yeah, the graphics for this one were really pretty, too.
Yeah, the graphics were great. Again, it had that same art style in all of the promo art and box art. I would definitely recommend you Google just Mario Strikers Charged box art. It's really a neat design, and definitely something I recommend you check out. And, you know, fun game. Just very straightforward, but yeah. Still fun.
You know, it's just, like I said, a kind of a shame that both with the baseball and the soccer, we haven't really seen much. And, you know, Next Level still has a relationship with Nintendo. They're working on Metroid Prime Federation Force. They did.
Well, yeah, Next Level has. Moon. Next Level Punch has, Out. Like, leveled up, no pun intended. Like, they're like a Nintendo second party, practically.
Yeah.
So, the next one I want to talk about, and I'm just going to talk about this whole series in one, we're not going to talk about each iteration, is the Mario and Sonic at the Olympic Games games. They do one of these for every Olympics now. You know,
even for Sochi, controversial.
Yeah, to different, you know, levels of success. Basically, games are split up into, like, two different games. Like, there are real events and then, like, dream events, which are, like, a little bit more silly. And, you know, I'm a fan of these games. I know Slaggy doesn't like them.
I mean, I only played the first one, and I wasn't a huge fan.
My thing is, this is the closest we get in the modern age to, like, Konami's classic track and field series, and I feel like there's merit in that. Some of the dream events are really silly, where you have, like, Dream Canoe in the DS game, which is, like, Mario Kart's battle arena, except so it's like Mario versus Sonic battle, like, Mario Kart battle, basically. Which, you know, there is a... there is an audience for. The games are usually okay. I do know that they've had some bad installments, but, you know, generally it's just solid sports, like, mix-up game, like, where you're doing, like, button tap style gameplay. I think it's fun. I typically am into these games. I know Slaggy really dislikes them.
Well, I mean, I think the thing that's really interesting is that the team, or the division that's now Sega Sports R&D, is the same division that was responsible for the Panzer Dragoon series, for Jet Set Radio and Jet Set Radio Future. So it's just very interesting to think, oh, now you're doing sports, kind of like Rare.
Girl, we're talking about Sega. Those people are lucky they still have jobs.
That's true. And they had done a Virtua Pro Football for PS2, so I guess that must have been a pretty decent enough game for them to continue as the Olympic Studio.
Yeah. You know, and I also, while we're here, want to talk about three other games that are not series. Oh, just to clarify, though, Mario and Sonic at the Olympic Games was a 2007-2008 release for the Wii and Nintendo DS platforms. They were followed on the DS and Wii by Mario and Sonic at the Olympic Winter Games in 2009. In 2012, we got Mario and Sonic at the London 2012 Olympic Games for Wii and 3DS. In 2013, we got Mario and Sonic at the Sochi 2014 Olympic Winter Games Wii
U
release.
How dare they?
And, you know, coming up next year, we're getting Mario and Sonic at the Rio 2016 Olympic Games. And this one, interestingly, in Japan got an arcade release.
Already in July.
Yeah, in advance of the 2016 3DS and Wii U release. So, you know, if you're looking for some track and field style gameplay, that's where you want to go.
Yeah.
This is probably as fine a time as any to mention Dance Dance Revolution Mario Mix. This was, of course, a Dance Dance Revolution game full of both Super Mario Brothers music and a bunch of, like, non-copyright classical music.
Well, I mean, you have to consider that the original Mario Brothers had some classical music motifs, so.
Okay, yeah, but we're not really talking about, like, old folks at home or whatever, okay?
Oh.
Right? Like, you know, and it's cool, you know, Turkish March by Mozart is in it. That's neat, but overall, a great game, great iteration.
I love Mario Mix.
Dance Revolution.
It came with its own dance pad that was Mario themed. Features Waluigi as the main villain,
which, you know, I'm obviously all about.
Overworld map too.
It did have a story. I just never played through it. I was always just more interested in playing the songs. So I downloaded a save file that had everything unlocked, so I didn't have to worry about all that. You're like sitting here like a 5-year old in class. You're like, oh, burn!
Right, like, I was about to say you had to unlock it through, like, story mode, right?
I think so, and I just didn't care. I'm not playing DDR for story mode. I'm playing DDR to dance to a couple songs that I specifically want to hear, and that's just where it is for me, so I'm not messing with all that. If you like Dance Dance Revolution, you'll like Dance Dance Revolution Mario Mix. I mean, come on.
Something that is cute to note is that the athletic theme from Super Mario World was known as Pirate Dance in this game.
Yes!
I approve!
This next game, though, is one that I actually love. It's very near and dear to my heart.
I forgot about this one.
Developed by Square Enix. This is Mario Hoops 3-on-3. It is a basketball game, which actually has some crossover with Final Fantasy.
I forgot about that part, too.
But rather than going and bringing over, like, Cloud Strife or whatever, you would get, like, a white mage and a black mage, and it's really great. The mechanics of the game at the time were fun. I don't know if I'd still be into it. It was really basic, but this was an original DS title released in 2006 in most regions except EU, which got it in 2007. It was very, you know,
Is there a story
basic
mode?
You know, I don't really remember.
If you had to play against some villains known as the Mean Team.
No, I don't believe there was a Mean Team. You know, you keep talking about how much you hate Space Jam.
I hate Space Jam.
But you have brought Space Jam up so many times today.
Because it's hilarious.
Ah, bitch. So, overall, though, I liked this game. I thought it was good. A little bit silly. Definitely basic. But, you know, overall, it was fun. And, you know, the Mario, Final Fantasy crossover stuff was great. I thought the Black Mage character design used for this game in particular was so good.
Yeah, now that you're mentioning it, I remember when the promo art was coming out for it, I was like, oh, this is Black Mages. We're having fun.
And the last game I want to talk about here, also developed by Square Enix and has some Final Fantasy and Dragon Quest crossover, was Mario Sports Mix. This was a Wii game released in 2010 on Japan, 2011 in the other regions. It had cameos by ninjas, white mages, black mages, Cactars and Moogles, and slimes. You could also opt to play as your Mii. This was a mix of volleyball, hockey, dodgeball, and basketball, and it did have a story mode for reasons I will probably never understand. It was a really cool game in as far as like having a lot to do. I felt like it was a lot of fun, even though sometimes it felt like the game was like, how do I say, the AI was really dull. Like, the AI, it felt like you were playing on easy mode, even when, like, you were not playing on an easy mode.
Oh.
But overall, you know, it was a fun experience. It did have local multiplayer and online multiplayer. I never played it multiplayer, and maybe it would have been more fun playing against other people. As it stands, it's just, it's a super interesting footnote that, you know, Mario crossover with Final Fantasy. But you know, I guess we saw that a lot in that era between Mario Hoops, Mario Sports Mix, and even like Fortune Street.
Oh, yeah.
So it's some cool stuff going on. Did you have anything to say about Mario Sports Mix, Slaggy?
Nope.
All right. Well, then let's move on to our final little segment here.
Oh, this one's fun.
Let's talk about Mario Edutainment Games. All right. Well, you know, the first game, and I never played it, but this was a Japanese-only release in 1988.
Wait, you mean you've never played I Am a Teacher Super Mario Sweater?
What kind of Mario fan are you? It was a Famicom Disk System game released, designed by Royal Industries, a Japanese appliance and sewing machine company. And basically, you could design sweaters that you wanted to wear, and then the company would make it for about $25. Which in
weird
80s money was about $50.
Let's be clear. That's so weird.
But it's super weird. Super weird. Hardly even a real game.
Hardly even edutainment.
Where you get things that were, well, it did teach you to sew. It had like a whole sewing tutorial mode.
Oh, okay. That's
so
cute.
So that was cute. But where it really things really get more interesting is these licensed games made in North America, primarily by the software Toolworks. They did a five-game series called the Mario Discovery Series. This started off with Mario Is Missing, which amusingly is an NES game, or at least there was an NES version of the game that had all of the sprite work based on the sprites from Super Mario World.
Yeah.
So even though it's, you know, an NES game using the NES color palette and stuff, you have Bowser castles designed to look like Super Mario World Bowser castles with art assets that never appeared in the NES Mario games at that point or even still. So these games were all notable for, like, the ones that did have, like, Mario-style jumpy bits. The physics were just complete ass. But, you know, it was still cool. Mario Is Missing was almost like a take on, like, Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego style game. It did have some side-scrolly, you know, games as far as, like, doing a little bit of exploration in Mario side-scrolly areas. As a game, it was kind of a flop, but it had a lot of great info as far as, like, learning about different locations around the world, you know, similar to Carmen Sandiego.
And I don't remember this at the time because, you know, I was a kid, but apparently has, like, a adult-level difficulty.
It did, but it really still wasn't that difficult. It was just
well,
a matter
you
of
were like,
your education level.
You were, like, a gifted child, so.
Anyway, the next game, a very similar note, was Mario's Time Machine. Mario's Time Machine, and I actually have a cartridge of this in my closet right now.
Oh, wow.
It is a really weird game, very similar to Where in Time is Carmen Sandiego. You may be noticing a theme by now.
Yeah, Carmen Sandiego is the queen of edutainment.
Bow down. Real talk, bow down. This game, once again, you know, very similar. It's a really silly game. Has a very similar style to Carmen Sandiego, had some really awful platforming segments that just felt absolutely wrong. Just absolutely
too bad they didn't
wrong.
Have the Mario Maker tools back then.
All right. But, you know, overall, you're trying to solve the puzzle of you know, whatever's happened. Bowser kidnapped Yoshi or something.
At least he didn't kidnap Mario this time.
All right. But it's silly, and awful, but also fun in its awfulness. It's Kusoge, basically. Most of these edutainment games are Kusoge.
Yeah, I mean, Mario's Missing was notable because before Luigi's Mansion was the only starring Luigi role.
Oh, yeah, that is true. And the other games that they did were Mario's Early Years Fun with Letters, Mario's Early Years Fun with Numbers, and Mario's Early Years Preschool Fun.
Cute!
These games were compatible with the SNES mouse. They were SNES games, and they were probably the closest relation to like a Number Blasters, Number Munchers type game. There was also a series of typing games. They were called the Mario Teaches Typing series.
I played that in the computer lab, yo.
Why don't you talk about that? And I think that's the last edutainment game we're going to talk about. We're really scraping the bottom of the well at this point. I think it's time to move on. But talk about Mario Teaches Typing.
Mario Teaches Typing was typing software, but as you typed, it would take Mario through like a platforming level, like in the vein of Super Mario Brothers. So, I mean, it was a typing game, but it made typing fun because, you know, you got to take Mario through the letter.
Excellent.
Through the level by typing letters and words.
That sounds fun to me. All right.
And what's notable about that is that you can play it for free thanks to the Internet Archive, which has in-browser emulation. You know, we talked about that. We talked about that on Game Buoy, right?
Yeah.
Thousands of games that you can play. Mario Teaches Typing is one of them.
Excellent. Very cool. All right, well, let's wrap this conversation up then. Slaggy, obviously, Mario has been in a ton of games. There are a ton of non-core series games, tons of spin-offs.
Yeah.
What is your favorite Mario spin-off series?
Well, Snap.
And if you can, follow it up with what your favorite game is within that series.
That's really tough. As a puzzle gaming fan, I love a lot of the puzzle games. I mean, you know, Tetris Attack obviously is one of the best puzzle games of all time, even though, you know, the rest of it is really in Japan was not typically a Mario game. You know, I'm definitely fond of the Paper Mario games. Paper Mario, the original one, definitely was a classic. Thousand Year Door is also great. So I probably would go for, like, Paper Mario and, like, you know, the Mario puzzle games.
Excellent. All right. Very cool.
I mean, since we're not counting Mario Kart, which is, like, you know, we already established.
No, you can count Mario Kart here, just because we didn't talk about it in this episode. It's still a spinoff.
Mario Kart, and then, you know, Mario Party, which we didn't talk about today because we did the Party Games Party a while back.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, Mario Kart is definitely my favorite spinoff series, but barring that, it would probably be Paper Mario and puzzle games.
Yeah, and you know, we also didn't talk here about, like, Mario Pinball Land, which was a whole thing. I mean, you know, there are so many Mario spinoffs, and you know, there's stuff like Super Princess Peach we maybe could have talked about here.
Oh yeah.
Captain Toad Treasure Tracker.
That's true.
Probably an argument could have made, we didn't mention, you know, Mario Clash, which we talked about a little bit in our Virtual Boy episode.
And you might notice we did not
Luigi's
talk about
Mansion.
Well,
but
yeah.
We may do a Luigi, maybe we'll do a Mario Micro, and we'll just talk about some of the non-Mario Mario games.
And also including that Wario, which, I mean, Wario might need his own episode.
We honestly may need to do a whole Wario episode. Man, you know, I thought we were coming to the end of our Mario coverage, but maybe we're coming to the beginning.
Well, I mean, we'll save them for another month. It's Mario's month, not Wario's month.
Well, no, but maybe, oh man, we can't do that in October. October's our spooky stuff month.
Ooh, Mario!
Well, I would expect an episode on non-Mario Mario games by the end of our Ninty 90s. Let's say that.
Yeah.
But Mario Pinball, fantastic game. Specifically, I'm thinking of Mario Pinball Land. Was a really great Game Boy Advance game. Used some really strange, like, rendered graphics that I wasn't super into. But I loved it. I thought it was a really fun game. And, you know, definitely one that I would check out if it were, if I were you, because it's easily accessible now on the Wii U Virtual Console.
Yeah.
Across all regions. So, but my favorite spin-off series is probably the Mario RPG series, and my favorite specific game is probably Mario RPG.
I'm not surprised by that.
I love that game. I love the story. I love all the characters, all of the non-Mario canon characters, like Malo and Geno. Just a lot of really cool stuff going on in that game. I'm a big fan, and kind of blew my mind when it came out, like, that there's a Mario RPG made by Squaresoft.
As a young lad who, you know, was a devout RPG fan.
That's exactly my point. Like,
it was like my two loves together.
Yeah, right? It was chocolate and peanut butter all in one. So let's move on, though. Sagi, do you have any closing thoughts on Mario spinoffs?
No, just that, like, I kind of preceded the discussion with that, you know, with the notable exception of a few craps, most of these games are definitely worth your while.
Yes, absolutely.
Nintendo, I mean, it's the Nintendo seal of quality. I mean, even if that isn't really a thing anymore, you know, it's still kind of a meme. But, you know, Nintendo generally puts out solid games, so.
Excellent. All right. Well, then, let's move forward to our next segment in the show. We are done with our discussion.
Rumor has it. Rumor has it. Rumor has it. Rumor has it.
Rumor has it that Adele is working on her new record. No, I have no idea what Adele's up to these days.
Actually, she is working on her new record. Supposedly, it'll be releasing in November.
What?
So
maybe we'll have a new bumper.
The actual rumor that we're going to talk about here today is that Sega may very well have a new VanillaWare title to announce at the Tokyo Game Show next week. Basically, Sega has said, you know, they have a big showing at this year's show, and looking at their official page for their lineup, the page's source codes reference a series or a game called 13 Mecha Soldier Defense Zone. And while that might not ring a bell straight away, VanillaWare had actually posted a Happy New Year's card years back, which had that title listed among art that no one had seen before or since in any official games. People are putting two and two together and assuming that this is a VanillaWare game titled 13 Mecha Soldier Defense Zone that Sega may well be taking over publishing duties for. We will know a little bit more about this between September 17th and 20th, which is when the Tokyo Game Show is taking place. Please look forward to it.
You can tell it's getting close to the end of the episode, because when you said two and two, I was thinking, if you put two and two together, you can see what our friendship is for.
Oh, what's going on?
That's not a Spice Girls song.
I said, hey, what's going on?
So this week I have been playing Shower with Your Dad Simulator 2015, Super Mario Maker, and Destiny. Going down the list, Shower with Your Dad 2015, I mainly played it because of all of the hype that people think it's Frog Fractions 2. It's clearly made by someone who loves Frog Fractions. Don't know if it's Frog Fractions 2, but it's pretty silly. Funny that the Steam community is getting, like, really unpleasantly homophobic about it. Like, I saw a lot of comments in the Steam community about, like, why this game here, we not gay. Like, really, bitch? But, you know,
I mean,
why
have they got to make showering with your dad something sexy? I mean, gross.
Yeah, no, and that's the community, not the game designers.
Right, right.
Dude, one, like, super aggressively heterosexual guy on Gaff was like, why would anyone even make this game? I stopped showering with my dad when I was 5 because I knew it was wrong. I'm like, dude, if you think showering with your dad as a child is wrong, you have psychosexual issues that you need to have looked into immediately. Like, that is not a healthy view of sexuality, to be sexualizing that activity that young.
Right.
Not that I am a psychologist.
Quick side note, it seems like this is Frog Fractions 2 is kind of like a meme lately in the indie games community. Like,
well, because Frog Fractions 2 was supposed to hit around this time. So
like all of these quirky indie games, people are like, is it Frog Fractions 2?
Yeah, right? Anything that's like indie and weird right now, people are asking, is it Frog Fractions 2?
What if they were all Frog Fractions 2?
I'd love it. That'd be amazing.
They'll all be released in a compilation together along with like actual Frog Fractions 2.
All right. So, let's see. Also playing Destiny, the big pre-expansion patch for the Taken King hit. Changed a bunch of gameplay systems. I'm super into it.
It changed Dinklebot.
It did, actually. Peter Dinklage's character is now voiced by Nolan North.
Some people not feeling it.
Yeah, some people are not feeling
it. In the words of Danny Noriega, a.k.a. Adore Delano, some people weren't feeling it.
So I'm feeling it, though. I think all of the changes are for the good. I think the game is a lot more fun now than it was before, and I'm actually really stoked for the expansion now. I'm definitely back on the Destiny train. I played this weekend alone probably 5 hours, and that's while I had company over, so sorry, Slaggy.
Yeah, thanks.
And the other game I've played a lot since it released on Friday, but, you know, I got it at 9 p.m., Thursday night. Even though I had a pre-order copy, I still ended up buying it off the e-store just to play it a little early.
Because that's what you do.
Super Mario Maker. I'm loving it. I'm living for it. I have played stages from some of you listeners out there. So much good stuff. A ton of you clearly understand level design. Really enjoying playing your creations. Really enjoying playing the stages it came with. And I am really, really, really loving making my own stages.
I'm not surprised that Game Buoy listeners, like, know what's up with Mario levels.
Right? Just overall, very positive experience. As soon as we're done recording here, I'm gonna go play more Mario Maker, in fact. Slaggy, how about you? What have you been playing?
Well, played a little Smash. Had a pretty good Smash night last night, actually. Despite I was having some, I was feeling a little under the weather, but actually ended up having a really good Smash night. Got some good Peach in, got some good Bowser in. Starting to really connect with Bowser a lot. Not in the dad Bowser way that a lot of y'all are connecting with him, but just as a Smash character.
Ooh, you getting Bowser's inside story, huh?
Squeeze me. And it was also interesting, like, you know, we went on random a bit, and it was interesting to get, like, Marth popped up, and I was like, oh, because I've been playing Roy a lot, and it was really interesting to compare Marth again after having not played him for a while, so...
Excellent!
Yeah, maybe we'll have to upload some of those levels to prove that I am not the worst Smash player in the world.
If
maybe,
we're
like,
going to
worst.
Be uploading our plays, then we need to have a couple of real matches where I really bring it.
I'm worried now because I thought you were really bringing it.
Me playing a stage using a random character? Not really bringing it.
No, but in all the other ones where you were like...
Come at my Zero Suit Samus, bro.
All of the
Come at my Ike, bro.
All, like, you mean all the other matches we did that night? Anyways, I've also played some of Captain Spike's Mario Maker levels, which are quite good.
Aw, thanks.
I haven't had a chance to make any yet because I've been at the SS Game Buoy. And as we mentioned, Game Buoy superfan Dan Diaz had a D&D game that we were at, so... I have not had a chance to make my own since that game just came out, but I'm already like, oh my god. And so please look forward to my Twitter. My Twitter is at Sidekick. I will post any codes, and, you know, once I make a first level, you can just follow me and check out my levels.
Yeah, and that's one thing I want to point out. If you play Mario Maker, you play someone's level getting their code, you can then heart their profile for easy access to all of their stages so that you don't have to mess with codes anymore after you've hearted them.
Yep.
So that sounds great, and Slaggy, unless you have anything else, I think it's time to... start up the wind down.
Yeah, I've got a few social links here. I'm not going to read everything. We had a lot of discussion about Ashley Simpson and her career being underrated, but we're going to keep it to the Buoy stuff since we've gone very long tonight.
On a Monday, I am waiting.
Is that what everyone's feeling on when Game Buoy, they're waiting for Game Buoy posted? On a Monday, I am waiting. Anyway, your enzymes started out here saying, I'm sorry, I hate Yoshi's Island. Baby Mario is just terrible. Captain Spike, you had replied saying, you know, that you think the level design's top-notch. And then your enzyme saying, I don't really hate it. There are plenty of merits to it. But all of them are negatively affected by crying Mario. The funny thing is that I was thinking about that when we were talking about Mario and Luigi Partners in Time. Because I'm like, a lot of people do not like the Baby Marios at all. Including in, like, Double Dash and stuff. They're just like, oh, hell no. We also got a tweet from Crystal Y. Diaz, part of the Game Buoy Superfan Super Couple. I think this was in reference to the fact that, like, if we tried to do a Patreon or something, we would not get more than a total of $20 ever, or a Kickstarter or something. She said, I would give you guys more than $20. I wouldn't give you a Kit Kat, though. I would bake you guys an organic cake or cookies. Aw.
And I would eat all of the things.
And then you could invite us to your castle to eat them.
Aw.
Mario 64 reference. And on that note, she also said Super Mario 2 was the first time I ever wanted to be a princess as a child. Which is interesting because I thought it would have been as Ariel from The Little Mermaid. And last but not least, she rounds it up with a tweet saying, LOL, I was wondering why there were two cans open, one right after the other. I was going to call you on it on Saturday. And I hope you enjoyed it again.
Yeah.
With that, we love your feedback. We like your iTunes subscriptions, ratings, and reviews. We appreciate you being patient with us as we navigate the iTunes weirdness that we've been having. Give us an update if you notice that that's been a positive change where it's like actually working now. We like your Facebook likes. We effing love Twitter.
We effing love Twitter.
Our Twitter is at GameBuoy.org with the .org spelled out D-O-T-O-R-G.
At GameBuoy.org with the .org spelled out D-O-T-O-R-G.
And you can tweet me at Slidekick.
You can tweet me at SpikePoint.
And you can email us at MailBuoy@GameBuoy.org.
MailBuoy@GameBuoy.org.
You can check us out over on Stitcher Radio, which maybe you're doing right now. Hi, Stitcher fans.
Hi, Stitcher fans.
And all our social links, everything that you could possibly need, our entire 92 episode archive is over on GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
So let's start out with the shout-outs, Captain Spike.
As ever and always, my first shout-out goes out to VG Realness, serving up a weekly dose of gaming chit-chat among friends, as well as Orange Lounge Radio, where every gamer has a voice and from whom I steal ever so many of my cues. I'd be remiss not to mention Nintendo Fun Club, your place for platformers, positivity, and pop punk, as well as their sister show Enos Lives, looking at your favorite PlayStation 1 games one game at a time. You should also go check out Nintendo Love Fest, which does exactly what it says on the tin, as well as their sister show, X Nation, which you can find over at theculturalwormhole.blogspot.com, an awesome podcast focusing on Marvel's Mighty Mutants. You should also check out Slag Kick's currently off-season show, Reading is Fundamental, which takes a look at RuPaul's Drag Race from a drag critical eye. I appear on that show, as does Rob Roberts from Orange Lounge Radio and Delvin from VG Realness.
And it seems like 2016 is going to be a busy year for that with Season 8 and All-Stars 2.
Yarp. We've also got here the Starboard Power Coupling Podcast, a Star Trek podcast you hope doesn't fail, as well as Tables, Ladders, and Podcast, a professional wrestling podcast for the common man. Slaggy, take me somewhere. I don't care. Anywhere.
I'm going to take you to Game Bar. That's the gay video game Prairie Home Companion and a part of the Hunty Bunch. I also, along with Koopa Club, that's Koopa with a Q and Club with a K, an award-winning podcast about Nintendo and gaming with an LGBT twist. The award was from their loving mothers, and I am looking forward to their new seasonal format coming very soon. Can't wait to hear that. I'd also like to shout out to another member of the Hunty Bunch, the Joystick Jockeys, featuring DJ and Ruben, two LGBTQ gamers who love games and love talking about them, along with La Palanca Podcast, podcast por y para gay gamers Latino-Americanos in Espanol. Over on the Voice of Geeks Network, you can check out some great shows like Orange Lounge Radio, Starboard Power Coupling Podcast, and if you're still playing World of Warcraft, or, you know, you want to keep up with what's up in Azeroth, you can check out Girls Gone Wild, where you can get a female perspective on the world's most popular MMO. Well, that part might be a little bit up to debate right now, but it's a great show, even if you're not currently playing the game like is the case with me. Our theme music was done by Zelda Reorchestrated. We always want to shout him out. Pour Out of 40, the late great project that aimed to reorchestrate Zelda music and beautiful symphonic sound. Captain Spike, take us out.
Well, thank you so much for joining us this week. We've had a great time talking to you about Mario spinoffs. We're going to take next week off due to the fact that I'll be out of town, but then we'll be back with you toward the end of the month for a look at the world of Mario. We're going to look at sort of Mario's influence and impact on pop culture at large. Until then, though, thank you for sticking with us this week. We've had a lovely Sunday afternoon. Keep gaming.
Keep gaming.
Keep thinking.
Oh, I'm sorry. I forgot a podcast to shout out.
Oh?
Yeah. These two silly podcast pirates named Captain Spike and First Mate Slidekick have a brand new show that's part of the podcast pirate fleet, and that is Anime Buoy, your port of call for anime recommendations, news bits, and discussions that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be.
And since we're going to be recording that in literally 5 minutes, see you in 5 minutes, Space Cowboy.
Oh, yeah, because we're talking about Cowboy Bebop.
Right?
That was
100% intentional, just by the by. I need you to laugh like that, but louder.
Ooh.
Dr. Mario, Dr. Mario.
The first game in the Dr. Mario series was Drix Mario. Because it's like the RX symbol. Drix Mario.
Drix Mario.